Now, the format of our meeting today is we're going to have three speakers. Adrian from Barbados, Adrianus from Aruba, and Janice from the Bahamas. And again, I'm Bud. You see Frank on the program. That's my real name. Bud is my nickname. And I'm from the Cayman Islands. Welcome to everybody. Again, the format is the speaker meeting, and these gentlemen and our women friend will be speaking about AA in the Caribbean and in the West Indies, okay? And they're going to be sharing a bit about the geography of the Caribbean, our first speaker will, but then the rest of it's going to be basically with the experience of Alcoholics Anonymous on their particular islands. We hope that people who do not live in the islands of the Caribbean that are sitting in the audience will find this helpful when they come to visit us, because I can tell you AA is very strong and growing in all of these territories. So let me introduce right now Adrian from the Barbados, and he'll be speaking for about 20 minutes.
Morning, everyone. I'm Adrian. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Barbados. Well, I opened my big mouth and told Bud what I was going to be talking about, and I've gone from third in the lineup to first. So what were butterflies in my stomachs are now eagles. I'm not really going to speak about myself. I'm going to speak about AA in the Caribbean and then focus on Barbados. I'm an alcoholic. I used, I screwed up, and I'm here. And I'm really happy to be here. I have to thank AA for giving me my life back and making me happier than ever been in the last little while. So it's just amazing. Caribbean. We're actually some 20 million people, spread over about 1,500 miles, starting in the north with the Bahamas and running away all down the chain to places like Barbados and Trinidad and Tobago. We're right in the deep south. We speak five languages in the Caribbean, and obviously I'm reading from notes. Speak five languages. We speak Dutch, English, French, what we call Patois or Creole, and Spanish. AA is pretty well spread, as Bud was saying, throughout the islands. The majority of the islands do have an AA program or AA meetings. So I looked across the website, and there's about 100 groups spread across the islands. And as I said, we are about 30 territories with 100 groups. So it's not huge, but growing. Rehab centers, not very many. And I'll talk more about the Eastern Caribbean, which sort of starts around Jamaica and runs down. We have in Antigua, we have a rehab center run by, it's called Crossroads. Barbados, we have a rehab center, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Jamaica, you know, I'm sure we do, but I don't know what it is. And that's symptomatic of AA in the Caribbean. We really don't link together very much. We tend to be, you know, islands. The islands have been for 40 years now trying to get together in one group. It used to be the Caribbean Commonwealth, I think, or the Tried once, and now it's CARICOM trying to get together as a unity, and everyone wants to be king. So at the moment, we haven't succeeded. We haven't succeeded at all. St. Lucia, quite a small island. Population-wise, bigger than Barbados, actually, yes. They have one. And in Trinidad and Tobago, there's a Mount St. Benedict, which is actually a co-ed rehab center. Most of us who have been to rehab centers, including myself, if we can afford it, we tend to travel out. So that may be a good thing or a bad thing. It means that we take our revenue outside and we go to the sort of rehab capital of the world, which is Miami. for us, anyway. So that's the Caribbean in a nutshell. Barbados, as I said, that we're right at the bottom of the chain, and that's fortunate for us in days like this where, you know, we just had Hurricane Alex. Alex, you know, we don't get hurricanes, by the way. That's a little blurb on Barbados. If you want to come, we don't get hurricanes. The last one we had was in 1955, so it's a long time ago. And so we're right down in, like, Trinidad and Tobago. We just south of the hurricane zone. English speaking, we're the only island, in fact, that never changed hands. So we're always under the rule of the British, starting with the British pirates. All of those islands were run by either French, Dutch, Spanish, English pirates in the beginning. But we maintained our English heritage. And our main business today is that of tourism. And, you know, when I was in rehab, you know, you come out with all these ideas, you know. I mean, I don't know if you just come out, you know, you feel you're cured, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. The thought I had was, you know, bring into Barbados sort of, you know, rehab tourism, you know. And, you know, looking around here, we got 60,000, at least we can get some of those every year. But, you know, maybe one day. You know, I've learned a couple of things since coming out of rehab, all knowledgeable. We're a very stable, peaceful country, very, very strong police force and stuff like that. And really, we learned from the British, so it's stable. So, you know, it's a land of sea, sand, sun and fun. And the birthplace of rum. Birthplace of rum. Very small island. It's 166 square miles, so 20 miles long by 14 wide. And it's small population, 260,000. You talked about anonymity, Christ. Anonymity in Barbados is just a nightmare. It is. Everybody knows everything about you, even if you didn't do it. You know. And we are very sort of socially conscious. So there's social stratas. You know, everybody in Barbados and my social strata knows I'm alcoholic. And we're a bit backward in that way as well, I find, in Barbados, because it's still deemed, you know, something that is wrong with you, and you've lost control and you've failed, you know. It's not been accepted, you know. If you got diabetes, oh, poor man, you know. Take your insulin and get well, you know. But if you're an alcoholic, well, you can't handle your rum. What's wrong with you, man? You know, we Bajans drink rum. We invented rum, you know. What's wrong with you? So anonymity is a real problem, talking about, you know, in Barbados. As I say, we profess, anyway, that we're the home to the oldest rum, 300 years old, a thing called Mount Gay. I would think that, you know, many of my colleagues from Barbados have at least tasted rum once. It is. Rum is prolific. Drinking is prolific in Barbados. I think you find the smaller the island in population, the more they drink. It's inversely proportional. The smaller the island, the more you drink. You go to somewhere like Bekwe or somewhere like this, which has 1,500 people. Those guys, like, drink. And they think a thing called Jack Iron, where ice will not float in it. You know, I mean, this is real stuff, you know, real hard stuff. I mean, you know, AA in Barbados, in the beginning, we're coming up to our 50th anniversary. Started in March of 1962, and we have an American to thank for this, a fellow by the name of Ed, who I believe came from California, and he came to Barbados sometime around March of 1962, and realized that there wasn't an AA organization, meetings, or whatever in Barbados at the time. So he decided, for some reason, to go and meet the editor of our local newspaper called The Advocate, who happened to be my father. You know, I just learned this 2-3 weeks ago. Perhaps my father should have joined. It's too late, he's gone. But perhaps he should have joined. And my father then introduced him to a co-worker by the name of Tony, who worked in the same newspaper, and he, in fact, is deemed, him and another guy, to deemed to be founding members. So we have a date of the 27th of March, 1962, as our founding date. I think there were like 4 or 5 people at the time. Two of them, Tony and Ulrich, are still active. And there was 5 of them met once a week. Went once a week in Tony's house. Sounds a lot like things that happened in Akron, Ohio. But that's the way it started. Just skipping forward into 69, 70. Ladies came into the group too. And the reason for mentioning that is we have, I look here today, and we're pretty evenly split between ladies and gentlemen. In Barbados, if you go to AA meeting, you've got 2 girls and 20 men. So it's a stigma in Barbados to be an alcoholic. It's even worse for the ladies. And it's got to be as many ladies drinking, having been out of control of their life and alcohol taking over than our men. So that's an issue we have in Barbados, and it's a significant one, you know. We have, any meetings then expanded to St. James Methodist Church. I know there's people in here that have been to that. People have visited. I can recognize some of our overseas friends that come down. And the other thing, which is remarkable, we met at a hotel my family owned, Sea View Hotel. So it's, even though it's so close to my father, this, you know, meeting the first gentleman, meeting in his hotel, but he never joined. Take a horse to water, I guess. Today, we do pretty well for a small island, I think. Well, we have meetings every day, evening and midday, mustard seed, and evening spedaram. We have 8 groups. Very small and intimate meetings, I would think. You know, never more than 50, perhaps. And that's a big group, you know. You go to some meetings in the evenings and you'll have 8 or so. So it's like much easier to share. Everybody knows each other. You're friends, as we all are, but you see each other more, so you can come out and really share your thoughts. It's almost like a support. It is a support group, you know. And so we see the same faces all the time. My sponsors in this room, you know. It's a mixture between, you know, Ram being so prolific and being small, you get more support. I'm not sure if I was living in New York, if I'd be sober today, because I was one of those sort of alcoholics that needed some form of discipline. So, if, you know, in a big city, I can just go and walk down the street naked, drunk, no one cares. But if I was in Barbados, you know, I'd be like, see an agent, he's drunk again, you know. So it gets back to my mother. it's not a good thing. It's a good thing, actually. It's a good thing. So that's helped me. The smallness has helped me. As I say, we have the 8 groups: Action, Crossroads, Freedom, Friendship, Mustard Seed, which is my home group, Step by Step, and Women Together. So we do have a women's meeting. I said a little earlier, we're fortunate to have a treatment center in Barbados. It's Verdun House, and it's supported in part by government and a British philanthropist. And local folks. So that is one. You have the psychiatric hospital, but that has a connotation in itself. You know, you're going to the mental, you're going to, we call it Jenkins is the name of the place. You're going to, you know, so that has a bit of a connotation. I've never been there. You know, maybe, you know, there's meetings there all the time, and, you know, people talk about catching the bus and getting off at the other stop and then walking back so people don't see them. You know, this is the sort of thing that happens, you know. You know, anonymity, you know, I mean, there's a guy that comes to our meeting all the time, which is next to our church, Queen of the Universe Church. What a wonderful name. And Queen of the Universe, you know. And, you know, he's always accused of being a Catholic because it's a Catholic church. They go by and see his car there every day. Go, but what are you doing there, you know? Are you Catholic, you know? Nothing wrong with being Catholics, you know, but, you know. So we have a psychiatric hospital, which really is our detox center. I don't think we have any other detox center. You know, people tend to go in there, usually court-ordered or really down, you know, really hit the bottom. And that's they have a day program there, which is a 12-step program. We have Teen Challenge, which many of you know is a Christian program. And we have Verdun House, which I'll speak to a bit more, because, you know, they have helped me. Not that I use their facility as a resident, but there's some members, there's a member of staff here from them. And, you know, they do good work in Barbados with limited resources. It's a, as I said, residential. It's quite young, just 10 years old. And they tried at one time the co-ed, and that didn't work out for them. Yeah. And I found that too I don't know what other people's experiences are, but for me, when I went to a rehab, it was co-ed. And, you know, you need as little distraction as possible in there. You know, we ask alcoholics, fall in love all the time. just fall in love, you know. And if it was distracting for, you know, a gray-haired sort of past middle-aged man, what was it like for the 22-year-old kids in there, you know? You know, so, anyway, just go ahead. That's my thoughts on that. They can host 60 residents, and they have quite an intensive program. It's not 28 days that you see a lot in the States, and I guess that is because in the States, you know, a lot of insurance companies only pay for 28 days, you know, so that's the 28-day program, I think. But we have a 3-month program, which is primary, and then they have a halfway house on campus there, which the folks in there stay between 6 and 9 months, so it's a long program. And, you know, I tend to think, for me anyway, that, you know, I just couldn't wait to get out of rehab because I was cured, you know, that was done, you know, so I did my 28 days plus 3 weeks, and that was it, you know, and people want me to stay longer, and I just want to run out. Anyway, it's working for me now. They have a very high, and I'm not sure on the validity of this number, very high percentage of their graduates that stay sober, they say 40%, so that is high. The other thing they do, which I think is very interesting, is that in this halfway house, they teach people skills, right? So they have these, what they call micro-businesses, you know, cooking, farming, auto-detailing, carpentry and welding. So it's not just rehabbing, you know, the mind, body and spirit, but giving somebody some skills when they go out, rather than just the ability to, you know, to knock back a drink as quickly as possible. The future for us, the folks, and I'm involved with that a little bit, the folks at Verdun, we want to start a women's center. We said by the end of this year, but, you know, we're in July already. Time is not a constant. I think it goes faster as you get older. And so either the end of this year or next year, a women's facility, they've got a place. We also want to put safe houses in Barbados. We don't have them. One or two, perhaps. Yeah. And for us in Barbados, you know, we're awe-inspired by this conference here. And we're going to try and throw something ourselves to celebrate our 50th anniversary. So we're going to have a celebration in March of 2012. Everybody is welcome. Please come down. Thanks very much. I'm Adrian, my alcoholic.
Thank you, Adrian. And thank you for inventing rum, but we perfected the consumption of it in Cayman. So, so there. Okay, our next speaker is Adrianus from Aruba. And again, he's going to share his experience of AA and getting sober in that island.
Hi, good morning. My name is Adi. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Aruba. This is my first convention. I'm very nervous. And, AA started September 13, 1955 in Aruba. And it was because we have an oil refinery that day, those days its name was Lago Oil Refinery. And one tanker came in and it had this alcoholic on the tanker. And he got off and he was asking the watchman, the policeman of the Lago Refinery, if they have AA on the island. And he said, no, maybe he should talk to the doctor from the hospital, from the refinery. His name was Dr. Turfboer. And he said, we don't have no AA on the island, but I have a few drunks in the hospital. So, and then he said, if he will be very glad if the guy, the sailor, could talk with these drunks in the hospital. So then the 13th of September, they started a group with 10 guys. And a year later, they were 60 guys. And now we have only two groups in Aruba, Joy for Living group and Aruba Study group, which is my home group. And before that, we had like nine groups in Aruba. And for what I hear about the story, that the Queen of Netherlands at that time, she built nine buildings for the nine groups. But they didn't know that about the non-profit fellowship or something like that. So after a while, they started this foundation of alcohol abuse in Aruba. And when they started with that, they noticed that they have the tradition about non-profit. And so I think the one who owned was the president of the foundation. They decided to start selling some of the buildings. And some of the buildings now are bars. And I think it was 2 years ago that this Chinese guy came walking in. He's a very old man with his son. And he sat in the meeting, and we thought he was an alcoholic, you know. And we are waiting to see if he will, you know, announce his name, and he's an alcoholic. And then he didn't say nothing. The meeting was closed. And he walked, he asked us, who is the boss here in Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I have this lease that I bought with a bar, and I'm not allowed to sell alcoholic beverage. And so I told them, we don't have no bosses, and AA ain't got nothing to do with the lease that you bought with the building. And he had to speak with the one who was the president of the Foundation of Alcohol Abuse, and I tell him that was Dr. Waver, that he has to visit Dr. Waver because he said he wants to change the lease so he could sell alcohol because he's losing money. But that's what I could say about we still have, because this year, September 13, we will celebrate 55 years. I don't know how we will celebrate it because most of us who are like new to the program, we didn't know that it started back then. It's my wife, she bought a book. I don't know where she bought the book. And while she was reading the book, Alcoholism, a congress they had on alcoholism in Aruba for 15 years that AA started in 1970. And she, in that book, there was all the story about alcoholism. And we got to know, like, when it was close to making 50 years, then I got to know about the book, and then I started reading it, and then I started telling all the guys that were going to the meetings that, you know, we are going to celebrate 50 years and all that, and the groups were very small. It's not like Barbados, you know. We have, like, when there's a celebration, someone celebrating, maybe we have 25, you know, people in the room. But the meetings are very strong. And when I noticed that we were having so much years of AA in Aruba, but from 9 groups, now we are only 2 groups, I start hunting down some old-timers. And now the one I'm closest with, he's 90 years old, and he has, I think, skin cancer. He's in the hospital at the moment. I hope he's there. And I just visited him Tuesday. And he, if he stays alive till September, he'll be 42 years sober. And through him, I met another guy, and he will celebrate in October 42 years. And then I brought them together, so we had a wonderful time sharing about how the recovery started. And after that, the two of them say, you know, we still know this other guy. His name is Tony. So I went to hunt down Tony. And when I got Tony, Tony will celebrate this year 48 years of sobriety. And so now with the two groups we have, we try to get something together to so that the old-timers could come together and see what we could do about celebrating 55 years so they could tell their story. And now I go back to me. I went to the rehab because they put in the newspaper that they have some experts to help people with problems of addiction. And I knew I was an addict because I was doing so much cocaine every day. And so I decided, because they are experts, maybe if I go there, then they will teach me how to check the cocaine before I started it. So when I get there to the meeting, to the rehab, my wife didn't know nothing about that I was going to the rehab, and nobody knew. I didn't know that, you know. That's why I believe that my higher power brought me there and is keeping me here sober today. And from the rehab, when I went there the first day, they tell me, you have to go to this meeting. And I tell them, sorry, you know, I'm here. You guys have to, like, teach me how to check the cocaine, you know. And so I went to my first meeting, and when I got to the meeting, it was... I found it very amazing, you know, astonishing. Like, those people, they tell me, come in. Come sit here, you know. You want coffee? You want tea? And I was like, they don't know me. Suddenly, I meet people that doesn't know me because I'm a soccer player and I was very good at playing soccer. Most people in Aruba know me because of that. And I work in a library. Many people know me because I work in, like, 28 years there in the library. And then everybody knows me because, like, Adrian said that Aruba is so small. Whatever you do, everybody knows. And so when I was doing cocaine, everybody knew I was doing cocaine. And I wasn't hiding it. And it took me a good while to understand why I was doing so much cocaine, because I love to drink, you know. And I was just doing cocaine so I could stay awake, so I could continue drinking. And so... And when I went to the rehab, I remember they talking about powerlessness, means like using against my will or drinking against my will. And I say, oh yeah, that's me, you know. And the first meeting, this guy after the meeting, because I tried to hide my face, you know, because I was pushing cocaine also. I was hiding my face because I said, all these guys, they look so good. They have smile on the face. They were well-dressed. I say, oh, maybe they are Interpol or FBI or CIA. You know, they're just trying to see so I could, like, tell them who's selling, who's the big dealer and things like that. So I was a little bit shaky and hiding my face. But after they start telling their stories, I say, oh, but my wife called them and tell them what I do when I get paranoid. And after, when the meeting was done, you know, I start accepting when the guy was talking about, because it was an NA meeting, my first meeting I went to, and the guy was talking about looking at the ceiling all the time and watching, looking in the back, somebody's following. I say, but how could he know that, all that happened to me, you know? So when the meeting was done, they closed with the serenity prayer and the Lord's prayer, and then this guy walked to me. I still don't know who he was, but I remember what he said. He gave me this huge hug, you know, unconditional. And he told me, Adi, you don't have to use nor drink no more. And I was like, what do you mean with that? You know, I mean, I'm in a rehab, and they will teach me how to do cocaine. Like, last weekend I did 10 grams, then they will teach me, you know, give me 8, and then 6, and then 4. He said, no, this is only for today. You don't have to use it no more, you know. And I said, I mean, only for today? I don't know if I could do that, you know. And he said, just keep coming back. And the next day was on Tuesday. I went to a meeting at noon, and they was talking again about higher power and unmanageability, and I didn't understand too much of it, but something happened to me that I remember those words about powerlessness and unmanageability. And my second day in the rehab, I was smoking those rolled cigarettes. You know, I couldn't roll them. They rolled them for me and light it up and give it to me because I was so shaky, you know. And my problem was that because I couldn't smoke no joints, no cocaine, no crack, nothing in the rehab, I was smoking the cigarette like it was a joint. So I was like, you know. And but after a while, when I was done with smoking the cigarette, when I threw it down on the ground, after a while, my mind tells me that it's a piece of joint. So I say, no, but it's a shack, you know. And then it's still, my mind still wins the battle, and I get up and I pick it up and I light it, and it's cigarette, you know. And so that night, the second day in the rehab, I said to myself, I will start managing. They said, my life is unmanageable, so I will show them that I could manage this. I will stop smoking, you know. And I'm a like chain smoker. I smoke like 3 to 4 packs when I'm drinking. And then when I went upstairs to go to my room to go sleep. I didn't sleep for the first 6 days in rehab, but when I went there, and I remember they say, I have to choose a higher power to believe in that could restore me to sanity. So I say, okay, I can't stop smoking. This is dumb, what I said I will do. But then I was looking through the window outside, and I saw the moon is like a half, like a banana, and underneath the moon was a bright shining star, you know, and I say, okay, you are my higher power. I choose that bright, shining star to be my higher power. And so I asked because once in a churchyard, in a Catholic churchyard in San Nicolas, I cussed God out, you know, and God and the whole Catholic church. And that time when I said, talk to the star, you're my higher power, the first thing that came to me was, I don't know where it came from, I think it's God again, you know, but I said to the star, can you please ask God to forgive me that day in the churchyard that I cast him out? And secondly, can you ask him please to take away the cigarette from me? And I don't know what happened, but Wednesday at night when I was, you know, washing my mouth before I went to bed, I start feeling like something happened to me, you know. And I don't know what it is, so I call my roommate and said, do you see something happen to me? He say. He told me, no, you know, I came in yesterday, and when I came in yesterday, you was crazy, and now you're still crazy. And so I went back in front of the mirror, keep doing what I was doing, and then suddenly it hits me that, oh, the whole day I didn't smoke a cigarette, you know. And since that, I start crying, and my belief grew with that thought, you know, that the star was my higher power for like 2 weeks in the rehab because I stayed there for 30 days. And from there, I got up every morning to talk with the star, and every night. And when the star wasn't there, I got angry because I couldn't see the star, you know. But since that day, things start changing in my life, and I start believing the star. And after like 2 weeks talking with the star, I say, you know, I was raised Catholic. I was an altar boy for so many years, and now I'm talking with the star. What's wrong with me, you know? And I said to myself, you know, I got up and I saw the star that day, and I say, you know, I really want to thank you from deep within my heart for all what you did for me. But I think me and you, we're done now. I don't. Yeah, I will go to God directly, you know, and since I start believing, and I remember they said in the NA program, they told me that I need to look for a sponsor. So I say, okay, sponsor someone who sponsors me with money. So I went to the meetings. I was checking who, like, best dress, who has more jewelry. And I asked this guy to sponsor me. And before, like, a month, I was, like, clean and sober for a month. And I hear this guy share. He always causing bad words. I say, I don't like that, but I still love him because he helped me with the recovery, not with the step. Just he always tell me, shut up, keep coming, take the cotton out of your ears, put them in your mouth. And so when a few days after that, we was reading the sponsorship literature, and then I say, oh, it's like I have to listen for a sponsor. And then I met this guy, Winston. And I asked him to sponsor me. He told me, go tell the other sponsor you're done. So I asked him to sponsor me, but he had a rule. He said, if you want me to sponsor you, do you have a big book? I said, yes. They gave me one in the rehab, but I don't like to read. He said, but if you want me to sponsor you, you have to read the big book. I said, but I told you I don't like to read. He said, so you have to go look for another sponsor. So I decided that, okay, I start reading the big book. And the hard part's coming now for me. Because then he started a group, that's my home group now, Aruba Study Group. And every Monday night we read the big book. And every Wednesday we do the 12 and 12. And then came this other guy from Texas named Randy. And Randy started the other group, Joy for Living Group. And we had meeting only on Thursday nights. And Saturday nights. Now we have meeting every day in the morning at 7:30 in the Joyful Living Group. They have a woman's meeting at 5:30 on Wednesday. We have meeting on Thursday, our own language and Spanish speaking, on Tuesday. And we have a bunch of meetings, and it's, you know, it's growing slowly. And I want to also say that I'm here because my wife sent me here, you know. We was planning, me and my sponsor, to come here, and he passed away 2 years ago. And but he's still here because that's why my wife sent me. She said to me, she gave me a Valentine's card this year, and when I open it, it says, you are going to San Antonio. I say, but how am I going to San Antonio? You know, Winston passed away. I don't want to go to San Antonio alone. She said, you won't be alone. That's why I'm sending you, because the only way Winston will be here is if I'm here, you know. And I will. I want to thank my higher power for blessing me with my beautiful wife. Her name is Angela. Most people that know her call her Angel because she's very humble. You know, I called her this morning, and she told me it will be fine. You will do okay. And I'm very glad that I'm here, and I think my time is up. thank you guys for being here.
Thank you, Adrianus. So if you're getting tired of listening to the same old stories, I'd say that you just come follow the island chain down, and you'll hear some good AA. That was wonderful. You know, that's how we're all related. You know, through this wonderful fellowship. Okay, our next speaker is going to be Janice from the Bahamas, and none of us knew each other this morning or have ever met before, so everyone's kind of an independent agent here, but she did say to me this morning, the Bahamas aren't part of the Caribbean, get that straight. And I always do what women tell me to do. Come on, Janice.
Hi, I'm Janice. I'm an alcoholic. Actually, my husband is from Trinidad, and he's pointed that out to me on more than one occasion, that the Bahamas are not the Caribbean, are not the West Indies. Trinidad is. So. When I got this, I got a letter in the mail asking me to tell my story, that there would be two other people. I was so excited, and I think I almost fainted in the chair. I was, you know, on the computer, and I thought, me? You know, I was just so touched, and I called my sponsor right away. Oh, my God, you have to hear this, you know. And I'm really honored to be up here with you guys. And I think, like Adrian said, you know, people, at least from my experience in the Bahamas, they don't see us in the recovering us. I think there's a tendency to feel better if we're still using. It's more acceptable. And one of the first things I noticed when I got to the Bahamas, because I'm obviously not from there, but I have been there over 20 years. But the first, when we first got off the plane and everything, we got in a car, drive on the wrong side of the road. and I noticed as we're driving along, there's a church, then there's a liquor store, then there's a church, then there's a liquor store. And I was really confused because I hadn't gone to church in a long time, but I figured they needed that liquor store. And being brought up Baptist, we weren't allowed to drink unless we snuck out the back door. And when I got to the Bahamas, I was a young woman and had so much trouble understanding AA or having a real desire to do anything about it because I, you know, at 20 years old, I went into rehab, and it didn't take, and I didn't know what was wrong with me and what was right with you guys. And at that time, there was a big group in Freeport in Grand Bahama, and I learned a lot from them, though. I didn't go away from there with nothing. I kind of did a revolving door for years and years until I was dying. And my mother and my husband got me into the hospital. And for 20-some-odd years, I would not do what you guys asked me to do. I would get a sponsor, which I said was my sponsor, but it wasn't really. It was the kind of sponsor you don't have to call. And you know, but it was just do the wrong thing every time because it's, you know, who wants to be told what to do? And that's kind of what I thought. When I went in the hospital this time, I didn't have anything left. I weighed 117 pounds. Went around in a wheelchair, and the doctor said you may not make it. I didn't know what to do. I lay in my room, shaking. I had added Valium and Percocet, or pain pills, to my repertoire. And I was just frightened. I was alone. I'd always had somebody to take care of me, said it's all right. There was nobody to do that. And I lay in bed that night. My husband gave me a rosary, and I held it really tight. And I told God, whatever you want of me is fine by me. If you want to take me now, that's fine. I believe you. I'll be, you know, I'm with you. If you want me to stay here, well, let's do that. But I turned myself over to God. And I had many small awakenings of a higher power. Besides, that was a big one. And because of our facilities in the Bahamas, we're not able to send people to rehab there. We have one place called Sandylands, and it's more for mental illness versus alcoholics or addicts of any kind. And I was lucky. I've had the same psychiatrist for 20 years. And he told me then, he said, I don't really think you will ever get sober. And I thought, well, he's probably right. I don't know. After I got out of the hospital nut ward, I got into rehab, and I had lost about 40%, 60% of my hearing from taking pain pills. And I couldn't hear anything. You know, if somebody would be talking to me, and they'd have to slap me. But I noticed with that I got better in meetings at hearing what people said, because I was paying closer attention, I think. They took us from the rehab up to the same AA club all the time to hear AA meetings. And a gentleman walked up to me, and he said, I'd like for you to come, next time you come back out, you know, the group from your hospital, there's going to be a great speaker there. He changed my life. And I was talking to him about that, and his wife walks up, and I thought, this is God, you know, my sponsor. Elaine's here, and her husband, and I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said, yes, call me. And I called her often, but she was, when she was out somewhere, she had a message. I just left a message. I was, oh, thank God. I don't, you know, I was afraid of everybody, really. My roommate would say, did you get a hold of your sponsor? And I said, she said, did you get the answering machine? I said, she was, we kind of related. But I eventually, you know, I got out of rehab, and I went to a halfway house. I had the luxury of having a lot of time to get myself together. And I was also willing, I think, and frightened. And frightened like I had never been before. But inside me, where that hole was, it was filling up with people, God, love, gratitude, everything. And I still have that. That hasn't gone away. And I knew eventually I'd have to go back to the Bahamas. This is where we live. And I was scared because it's such a small group that we have. And I live in Grand Bahama. We have group in Nassau. There's different, there's 100 islands over there, but there's quite Abaco. They're pretty active, and once a year in the capital, have a national convention. Everybody comes from everywhere anyway. It's a great place, November 2nd, I think. But I must tell you, I think we have to work much harder there because there's so few of us. And we know when the other one's not doing right. And you know, we relate and work together. And like I just said, you know, you drive down the road and stop off and visit with this person and stop over here and talk to the... And it's important. It really is important. And our meetings, we're trying to increase our meetings. We only have 2 meetings a week right now. And in that environment, there's drinking, booze crews. If you want some cocaine, you can go over here. If you want some prescription drugs, you can go over here. And relearning how to live in that environment has been interesting. But one of the neatest things, and I wish he was here to talk to you, is a fellow, name's Nate, and he opens up for our meetings. He's been doing it for going on 40 years, and he's hoping for that right person to come along to hand the keys over to. Honestly, I travel between the Bahamas and where I got sober often. And I don't know how he does it. You know, I don't know how the people that don't leave or can't leave do it. We've seen a lot of people recently that a doctor sent them there, their employer sent them there. One lady came in and she had, she was scared to death, a local lady, and they had told her she had a demon in her. And I thought, how hard is this going to be for this woman? They did an exorcism on her. And I know this was in her psyche because it was her religion. But fighting against situations like that, and church is great, but this is... We got to do this first, you know, and it's spiritual, and you can add on to that. And we pray a lot. And I think we earnestly over there wish each other well and are so thrilled when somebody visits. And I know the people in Nassau feel that way, too. I've talked to them. But I'm working on 3 years recovery, and there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for us to grow and expand. And I talked to a gentleman here earlier, and, you know, they're looking at us and saying, how can we help you get more people? So I'm learning a little bit at a time, and the Bahamas is beautiful. It can be a great place to be there and be sober. I want to start a beach meeting. We haven't done it yet. But, there's just all kinds of options. And I think the psychiatric, the doctors and nurses and everything, I think they understand that we are saving people's lives, at least, and giving them an opportunity to do it for themselves. For myself, this is all a dream come true to me. It's like hitting a jackpot, you know. I got a clean bill of health, which I couldn't understand. I knew something was wrong. Might have been alcohol, but... I think when I've heard people up here say, I'm grateful, and I thought that sounded dumb. I am, and I just am so very lucky in so many ways. And my bottom happened to me, but the people I love in my life are stood by me like, and I will never forget my husband who has stood by me through thick and thin, and my sponsor and her friends and my, just, you guys are absolutely fantastic, every one of you, everywhere you come from. I just am having a ball. And I still carry hope that things will get even more, you know, a little step at a time. But anyway, thank you very much. I love all of you.
Thank you, Janice. I'll talk to our Prime Minister to see if we can get you annexed and become part of the Caribbean. Well, we still have a little bit of time, so I guess I'll take this opportunity to promote AA and Cayman, okay? See the nod coming. I see my sponsor and my wife and some people from my group, my probation officer. Everybody's clapping. They say, go ahead. Yeah. You know, Cayman's kind of a peculiar place. It's I think we dropped from third to fifth largest financial center in the world. So we've got quite a cross-section of professional people and a lot of expats. We have a lot of bean counters, a lot of attorneys. But we have a lot of the local people that just, you know, are beginning to learn what Alcoholics Anonymous can bring to life itself, I guess. And it reminds me so much. I lived in different places during my lifetime, and Cayman is almost like being, it must be like what AA was back in the pioneering days, you know. And our primary purpose, I think, these days, we have about 14 meetings, or I think more, maybe 16 meetings a week. We have about 140 members, and we, you know, meetings are every day of the week. And it's like has been mentioned here, it being such a small island, it's really, really strong. Everybody kind of comes together, but there's a lot of people that come and go, you know, because they are professionals and they're just working, you know, working their way through their careers. And sometimes we have to say goodbye. But, you know, it appeared to me, you know, this is my own opinion, too, that, you know, a lot of the local population who weren't educated about alcoholism weren't participating. And it's just been fantastic. We have a little meeting. It's on a guy's front porch in a town it's known as Hell. That's the name of the town, Hell. And the name of the meeting is Hope in Hell. And it started off with just in the backyard, you know, in the back bushes somewhere, somebody's front porch, you know, the mosquitoes. We got dogs with three legs walking through the meeting and chickens running all over the place, and roosters. It started with just two people, and when I left to come here, the last meeting, there were 26 men and women there that were just showing up, you know, riding their bicycles out of the bushes, coming, walking there, having, you know, getting dropped off, getting rides, and you know, I think I was the only expat at the meeting, and it's you know, just does my heart good to see. To see that kind of growth and participation and seeing lives changed. And every one of the fellows and girls there that would share at that meeting say, you know what, it was only like, you know, 3 years ago we used to come down here to buy our drugs, or we used to come down here to get drunk and have Greg go out and buy us some more booze, you know. And they don't do that anymore. And it's amazing. You know, the population in Cayman is about 60,000, I think. And it's just beginning. It's really just beginning there. But I hope that, a lot of people at this meeting, I didn't know my name was chosen out of a lottery, out of a hat, you know. I thought they looked for the most sober person in the. Thanks for bursting that bubble. Then my service sponsor, who's the area delegate for Area 15, said, where's your jacket and tie? I said, I left that in Pennsylvania about 30 years ago, you know. But he said, well, button your damn shirt anyway. So here I am. Anyway, I'm really glad that everybody showed up here. I hope you'll come visit some of these wonderful islands and enjoy AA around the world. This is my first convention, and I'm just blown away. It's really, really, I don't know. It moves me. It's overwhelming. Anyway, I have a choice on how to close the meeting, and if you don't mind, I would like to close with the Lord's Prayer tonight. So if everyone would join me in closing this meeting then with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.